Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Tonight on the show, you've got me, Bonnie,
Colin,
and Silver Dave.
How did you become Silver Dave?
Okay, well, first, to answer that question, I have to go back in time a little bit to tell you how this whole thing came together. And so first, before this, I was a Green Beret in the Army Special Forces, mm-hmm. and I went to about 14 different countries, including Afghanistan. And when I was in Afghanistan, I had a very, very full military career.
What exactly is a Green Beret?
Okay, so Green Beret is essentially about the best soldier that there is in the Army, and you have to go through many years of tryout and training to get to that job. And so you have to be like the best of the best. They have enlisted and officers.
Okay.
The lowest ranking officer in the Special Forces is a captain. There are no lieutenants. They don't even exist. So lieutenants don't even talk to Special Forces enlisted. Like, they stay away from us because they're like, oh just stay away. So anyway, Special Forces, it's not conventional. That is, you have to really be hardcore to get to that.
Is it like spy work or just like sniper work?
So we have to learn all different types of skills, including interrogation, as well as interrogation resistance training. We go to a special school for a month where you essentially get captured and basically beaten up, and they test different your skills to resist giving information. And so you learn techniques to do that. You learn how to pick locks, learn a foreign language. Everyone gets a language.
Oh, what was yours?
Indonesian.
Whoa. Okay. You can speak Indonesian?
Now it's a little bit sloppy, but yes.
Is that what they call it? Indonesian? It's not like some other language, but...
Bahasa Indonesia.
Okay.
Means a language of Indonesian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you were a Green Beret.
Yeah. So I went to all these different countries, including Afghanistan, and I noticed that there was something really wrong with all the wars, with all the money and the spending.
It wasn't just the killing, though, right? That part,
you like that.
Well, it's a huge problem because the whole war is a fraud, and the people are literally being murdered by people who are invading them, and that they're being invaded by foreign men with guns, and they defend themselves, and then they get whacked. And so it's really horrible. The more you learn about it, and the more you learn about the frauds behind the reason behind the wars. And I don't know if we want to necessarily get into that at this show because it takes us deep.
But it is how you became Silver Dave.
Yeah. Okay.
So what were the things that you saw that got you?
The fact that Afghanistan is, here we go. I don't know if this is,
we can totally
find out how
this
goes.
Yeah.
Afghanistan is a giant heroin farm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so that's a huge thing, is that the whole countryside is covered in poppy fields with irrigation grids. It's not just growing naturally. This is like there. And
whoa.
The DEA guys literally said, you don't want to hurt the crops because we don't want to hurt the local economy. Mm. So like, I noticed, I was like, wait, there's a war on drugs, but yet Afghanistan's a giant heroin farm.
And you're protecting it. You're being paid by the government to protect it.
Yeah, like, we're like totally taking a deep rabbit hole into another thing, but there's no way 180,000 tons of heroin comes in people's buttholes. There's not enough butthole space. It comes in giant containers, and it gets past the security checks and the customs checks. Now, let's fast forward a little. I noticed all these layers of fraud and also massive spending, wasteful spending to a degree. You wouldn't even believe some of the examples I have.
Just by the military or like the federal government altogether?
Every country that was in Afghanistan, for example, was wasting as much money as they could in order to get kickbacks. And they would literally be buying $1,000 hammers just because they'd get $400 kickback between each guy. And they'd make the hammer for like 20 cents, okay, $2. But the point is that people were paying gratuitous waste. So all these people could make all the side hustle with taxpayer money, which of course is stolen from people in the first place. Now, why does that have to do with silver?
Yeah.
Well, when I noticed all of this waste of money, I started really questioning, how is this possible that the whole war is a fraud, all these things are a fraud, and then they're wasting all this money, And so I really had to question what was going on there. And so I deep dived into the monetary system and money. And I discovered that the money was silver, gold, and copper until roughly, like, say, 1964. They stopped making silver coins, and they started making coins that are silver colored, but have no silver in them.
And they're way uglier. They're not as cool.
But they're also not made of silver.
Yeah.
And silver.
They're made of like nickel, right?
Nickel plated copper.
Okay.
But so, and we'll talk more about why silver is useful more so than almost anything else on the periodic table. But we'll cover that in a moment. But basically, the coins and the money was silver and gold. And then they switched it for just promises.
What do you think about gold? Is there a reason you're Silver Dave and not Golden Dave?
Well,
that's his twin brother.
So the reason why is because right now I think that silver is much more spendable for basic essentials. And the reason that I got so into wanting to make 1/10 ounce silver was because I had this vision that things in the financial system may get that there's a cycle every 100 or so years when they install a new financial system and they crash the current one and they lead people into this new one. And in turn, people kind of have to go back a little bit to the Stone Age in terms of how they buy things. And so having little pieces of silver, I felt, would literally save your life. And that, you know, big pieces of silver, that's great. But if you want a dozen eggs or a chicken or a basket of vegetables and you bought only 100-ounce bars, you're going to have a big problem trading that.
Right.
And so, so Silver Dave, because I just think that silver is more spendable right now. Gold is too expensive for, like, basic essential purchases.
So what do you think about the gold backs?
So, well, okay. The gold back store, you can go to the Alpine gold back store in Manchester, New Hampshire, and you can buy 1/10 ounce silver that we make, and you can pay for it with gold backs. And you can come to local silver mint in Ware, New Hampshire, and you can buy gold backs or our 1/10 ounce with the other. You can buy either thing. Now, what do I think of the gold back? I think the gold back is nice. I like it as a collector item. However, I think that our 1/10 ounce is a better barter tool, and there's a few reasons for that. One of them is that in order to test and weigh the gold back, you have to melt it, and you have to go through a very elaborate chemical process to verify the gold content. That's the problem with it. Versus our 1/10 ounce, you can put it on a scale, and you can just weigh it, and you can test it in 100 different ways to verify that it's silver without destroying it.
All right.
So I kind of feel like silver is for smaller purchases and gold is for bigger purchases. So the gold back, I think, you know, because of that, I like our 1/10, but I have lots of gold backs in my personal collection. I think I have one of every gold back that there is, and I think they're beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think that they make a great gift for people that are new to precious metals because you hand it to them and they read it. So I think it's great. I don't want to sound like I'm knocking it.
Okay.
You know, but I am biased.
I could see you being a little bit like, ugh, everybody's all crazy about these gold backs. I've been trying to get them into something that's better, like these tiny pieces of silver for a long time. Well, not tiny, because that's the thing. Like, they don't have to be, like if you had a 1/1000th of an ounce of gold spec, that's literally tiny and you lose it. But silver is a little bit bigger, like you can see it, and it's been spendable. I can see you being a little salty about the gold backs, maybe. I'm not saying you are, but I would not fault you, is what I'm saying.
Well, I'm just saying that I think the gold backs are great, and I think they're more of a collector item versus I think our 1/10 ounce is a barter tool.
Mm-hmm.
And I just say because our 1/10 ounce, you can give it to a guy who's never heard of gold back, and he doesn't have to trust it. He can confirm it. If you give someone a gold back that has never interacted with it, they have to trust that what's in there is what's in there because they can't ascertain that data without destroying it and having a laboratory.
Yeah. Don't worry. I'm gonna have a solution to this before long.
The one thing I have to say about this, though, is that...
Let me know when it's done, Colin.
One thing I have to say about this is that they have technology. I forget what it's called. I used to say it all the time because people would ask us about this, and I used to sell the gold back sometimes. So their technology that they use to print it. I don't remember what that's called right now.
Oh, it's either vapor or vacuum deposition. I get it backwards sometimes.
Oh, okay. I don't think that's the word I used, but it's like something like that where it's like depositing on a molecular scale. So the thing is, like, it's not recreatable unless you have like a $20,000 tool. So it's like, it's not something that many like just like, and I'm not saying that you're completely wrong or something like that, or like, oh, actually, well, it's better than silver.
Two,
I'm not
saying
that.
There's two different concepts there. One is whether or not somebody could fraudulently make one. That's one thing. But then even the question would be the ones that are made by Goldback themselves. How would you verify that those have the gold in them?
So there is definitely an element
of
trust.
So those are two different. Yeah.
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 I just wanted to point that out, that that's one thing we tell people when they're like, how do I know? Well, you can go to them and talk to them, and they'll explain to you that it is real gold. And yeah, you might have to burn it yourself to verify it yourself if you really wanted to do that. But the other thing is,
you won't really be able to just do that yourself unless you're already like a scientist.
Like have a crucible or something. Yeah. Okay.
You have more than just have a crucible.
Okay.
Remember when we talked about in the backyard, Colin had me trying stuff with frying pans?
Yeah.
Well, it's taken 12 years. For us to figure out how to do this and how to make these silver items. And those guys that did the gold back, it took them many years to develop that technology as well.
Well, the technology was originally developed not even for a currency. It was developed just for plating the gold. I'm using the word plating, you know, broadly, onto the plastic for other things, for other types of products. Not the gold back came out about later.
Have you seen the silver back? In person?
Yes. No, actually, to be honest with you, I haven't seen them in person. I'm interested to see them.
I have some.
I'd like to have some in my personal collection.
In the last segment, we were just about to get into something. I had explained why silver and gold are good for spending in the case of, you know, the grid goes down, the internet goes down, the government F's off. I was explaining why it's good because, oh, you're a chicken wanting pickle haver and you're looking for a pickle having chicken wanter. That's so funny.
Yeah, you see, you're never going to forget that.
That was pretty tongue-tied, but I did it all like perfectly at once. So you said something you wanted to say about that, Dave, Silver
Yes,
Dave.
Yes, please. Okay. I think I'm really happy you brought that up because it's a really good point. And that when you're doing barters and trades, exactly the scenario where you want to buy a chicken, you've got watermelons. Well, the person you want to trade to doesn't want watermelons. And also because watermelons have a shelf life, they don't want to like accumulate lots of watermelons because it's hard to trade that later.
I know I do.
And so silver and gold are because of their... I think we got a dog that's...
Riley's on it. Our producer, right. Riley.
Oh, my goodness. I was just worried that the dog would not have the proper care that he needed. Okay, I'm getting back on the...
He's okay.
So basically, silver and gold never spoil. Silver, though it tarnishes, which means it takes a color known as silver sulfate, it does not oxidize or deteriorate. It literally lasts forever.
Whoa.
Also gold. And also, it's antibacterial. Also, it's the most useful material on the periodic table for a lot of reasons. And some might argue, oh, no, gold, silver, what's more useful? Well, silver and gold, regardless of what you think is the most useful, it's infinitely remelted into more things. And so because of its usefulness is what gives it value, but also because its infinite shelf life makes it a really great thing to take in trade when you're trading things. Other than like bananas are great. I love bananas. But if someone wanted to buy a truck from me and they're going to pay me in bananas, I can't eat that
and
many bananas.
The divisibility of it and things like that.
Store the bananas because they're going to go bad.
Some bananas are bigger than other bananas. So my banana is not equal to your banana.
Wow. We just learned so much in such a short time with you, Colin. Thank you. But let's get back to... Let's get off of your banana and get back to silver.
I forget if that's fungibility or if which property that is, but yeah.
Flustered Silver Dave.
The same thing's
true
with diamonds,
right? It's hard to concentrate.
Right?
He keeps touching my leg. No, I'm just kidding. He probably would.
Yeah, because with diamonds, you have the thing that the cut and the quality is different on each one. So even though they're small and, you know, they also, you know, have a shelf life and all of that, you still can't compare one to the other.
Hmm.
But that's not, you know, any silver that's silver or gold that's gold is going to be homogeneous for the most part. So you can actually compare them, you know.
Is it homogeneous or is it homogenous?
I think they, I don't want to get into that one. But
really?
I think they have a different term, though, when it's in economics versus chemistry. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, so basically, in a nutshell, when you take the periodic table and you start deciding which things make a good barter or exchange medium, you'll first look and you'll find a whole bunch of gases that are toxic or explosive. And it's hard to like give someone gases and trade for things.
Yeah.
Then you'll find other things like silica, which is like 70% of the surface of the earth. So it's very common. So it's hard to trade that. And then you'll find certain elements on the periodic table that are like toxic chemicals or highly reactive or suddenly combust into flames as soon as they get exposed to oxygen. And as you go further and further down the list, you find yourself to like, you have organic compounds that deteriorate or things that comprise what might think of wood. Finally, you get to metals. And then when you get to metals, you have like steel. And steel is really great, except that steel is very common in the surface of the earth and it rusts and deteriorates if it's not kept oiled. And so also it's really big. Then you have metals like as you go down the line, zinc and nickel, and then you have copper and silver and gold. Mm-hmm. And as you get to copper, silver, and gold, you find that copper, silver, and gold are highly useful materials. They have a rarity in the earth, and they can be infinitely reused. And so, in turn, as you narrow down a periodic table, what things that would be most commonly traded, you narrow it down. For thousands of years, it's been narrowed down to silver, gold, copper. Maybe gold, silver, copper, I should say. So first, I have to bring us to explain how a trap works. And I want to give this adage as told by a young boy in the forest.
Okay.
Okay. So a tourist comes to like a jungle and he's like there to, you know, like walk around and explore. And he gets like toured around and he gets a tour from a young boy who walks him around and they show him a wild boar in a pen. And the guy says, oh, what's that? Oh, it's a wild boar that we caught. And the man from the city who's touring the jungle says to the young boy, he says, well, how do you catch a wild boar? And the young boy says, well, first you find a bowl of food that the pig likes and you put it in the forest. And then the first night, the pig comes and he eats the food. And then the next night...
What kind of voice is that supposed to be?
It's like a jungle boy or something. Maybe it's not perfect,
is this, but... Is this from your experiences? Voices. So,
well, let me finish. Let me finish before you... It's Alex Jones' voice. No, I'm just kidding. So the boy says, first night, you put a bowl of food that the pig likes. And the pig comes and he eats the food. The next night, you build a single wall. And then you put a bowl of food... And the pig comes and he eats the food. Mm-hmm. The next night, you add another wall. And each night, you add a wall until you have an enclosure of all four walls and an open door. And you place the food that the pig likes. And then, when the pig is eating the food, you slam the door shut. And the pig runs around for a few minutes, wild and crazy, until he calms down and starts eating the food. Mm. And that is how you catch a wild pig. Now...
That is 100% true because I fell for that trick once myself. Yeah, oh, I mean it was pretty tasty though. I'd do
just
it
like
again.
A bowl of oatmeal in the forest. Oh my god, gross.
Okay, I don't know if it was worse to hear that or to see it. Thank goodness you folks are on the radio for most of you.
Ew.
So the thing is that the reason I said that is that part of the trap. The way that it works is they can't let people know that they have total control of it until it becomes popular. And so right now they're letting the Bitcoin and they're letting all these cryptocurrencies, which the government would never have let that be unless they meant to. And so they're letting it be because they don't want people to know that they have so much control over it. They want it to get popular and they want to get people to get emotionally attached to it and to get deeply invested in it. And so because if they exert their control over it now, they'll scare the pigs away before the whole thing is built. So they're literally building a digital prison around everybody.
I'd love to scare the pigs away. That sounds like a thing we should discuss. Scaring the pigs away.
So that's what I'm trying to do. That's why I keep trying to tell people that this is a trap, and I can get more into the difference between slave money and actual money, and I should. But in the moment, to just answer this thing, is that this is a trap, and that's why I've been trying to tell people. I know that people are emotionally attached to Bitcoin because they think that some guy named Satoshi Nakamoto made it and did it for humanity, and he didn't have anything to gain out of it. But that is just not correct. That's a fantasy.
I think that you are adding things into people's mouths when you say that we think he didn't have anything to gain from it. Like, he totally could have gained from it. He might have other wallets that we don't know belong to him. And
okay. And with that, that's
what
if he already gave himself the majority of the Bitcoin that was already assigned to people so that when it becomes popular, he'll have so much power.
This is actually already known. There were wallets that were known to be his, but then there's been no movement on them in however many years.
But they're not the majority of the crypto.
Well, they're big, but yeah, I don't know. I don't think they're a majority.
So this story that I've heard, except that it doesn't, I didn't hear anyone say that those are supposedly Satoshis.
Oh, yeah.
However, I have heard that there are some massive...
But there were a lot of people who early on, you know, like mined, like, you know,
tons,
a million or whatever, and then they lost the hard drive. So that's definitely a thing. There's tons of them that
but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about there are some pockets.
No, this would be the same thing. It'd look the same. Like, you'd look at the ledger.
That
may
be true too. Yeah. But they don't. But these big pockets of Bitcoin that are owned by some unknown people, and those unknown people could be very powerful, and they're leaving that Bitcoin dormant until it becomes popular and until the value, the so-called value, is up to then. They use it, and they will have an advantage over you. Like, if you were playing Monopoly with somebody and they already gave themselves like 60% of the money before you started,
I wish
you
I knew the percentage, because like, I don't know that it's 60%. I think people would talk about it a lot more, like, because that would be like, you know, a 51% attack.
Yeah, but the thing is, it wouldn't need to be 60% because the rest of it's divided amongst how many other million people. Mm-hmm. Even if one person had like 15% of the Bitcoin and then the other 100 million people had the rest of it, that one entity would have tons of power.
But like, how...
Well, they'd only have power. They only have power to affect the price.
To sell it,
you know? Yeah. I mean, they could dump it on the market and drive the price down.
Those are things they could do for a while. Even if Bitcoin was worth $1, it would be fine. It would be doing its purpose, and I would be happy. I'm not a price go up person. I also would like to point out that the government controls the price of silver.
So the markets have a lot of influence, and most of the silver market is paper silver. Mm-hmm. And that's why I would argue that the silver price has not gone up, and it's so low. In fact, silver is an incredible buy right now. I think it's one of the most undervalued assets in the world, along with copper. Go figure that I'd say that. In turn, that's because they've sold 100 times as much silver on Wall Street as there actually is silver. So that undervalues. Now, they just opened up a Bitcoin ETF, so they could potentially do the same thing.
Well, they already sort of have, in a way, even prior to the actual ETF existing, just with...
What is ETF, so with the listeners?
Electronically traded fund.
Oh, okay, and what does that mean?
It's a representative of the thing, just in the same way that he says paper for silver.
And I mean, Bitcoin out of all the cryptocurrencies fan. Just, we need to make that clear. It's like, just because Bitcoin is doing this retarded thing doesn't mean it doesn't condemn all cryptocurrencies. You're screened, but I forgot to ask your name, caller. You said you have something to talk to Silver Dave about, or you're something on the topic. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, it's Ian calling from the Merrimack County Spiritual Retreat Luxury Federal Wing. No one else has called in to challenge Dave, so I figured I should do that. Dave, I feel like you should stick with the fear-mongering around the government might shut the internet down or shut your internet down, because that's pretty hard to argue against. But the claim that the government can press a button and freeze your Bitcoin is completely without any kind of merit. There's no evidence for that. And if you have evidence for it, I'd love to hear it, because it's a pretty wild claim, and you're going to have some pretty good evidence for it. And considering that the source code for Bitcoin is open to anyone who wants to look at it, then somebody should have seen that by now, because it's some of the most watched code on the planet. So, I mean, what do you have for proof?
That's a great question, and it's great to hear your voice, Ian. So, first of all, I want to talk about access codes, which relates to your question. When you were probably playing video games at a younger age, or maybe people playing it now, basically there was a thing which was called a cheat code, and it would let you type in some sort of like combination of things, and it would give you like unlimited life or unlimited whatever health.
Yeah, it would cheat you in the game. Yeah,
and it would let you get, you know, deeper in the game. Now, the actual reason for that was so that programmers could test the features of the game in order to make sure the game works properly. And that cheat code is actually known as an access code. And that access code allows the programmers to go into the engine compartment of the program, so to speak, and make changes or fix and or repair. And now, so every program, it's funny, I'm not even a computer programmer, but I know this. Every program that's ever been made has an access code because it needs maintenance. It needs repairs like a car. And so Bitcoin has an access code. It has to have an access code because it would need repairs. There would be problems that occur. The programmers have to go in there and adjust it and fix it. And so the person and people or team that created all the different cryptocurrency, especially Bitcoin, which was funded, heavily promoted, heavily funded, the people who created it, they didn't just create something without giving themselves the ability to control it or influence it.
Let's let, I'm going to pause. Let Ian reply?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell, Dave, that you're not a programmer because it doesn't sound like you know what you're talking about at all. The whoever it was that created Bitcoin, whether it was one person or a team of people or whatever, they released the code right out the gate. It's called open source. And for listeners that don't know what open source is, the difference between closed source and open source is like a Microsoft product, for instance, is closed source. Windows is closed source. They don't want you to know what's going on in there. It's a black box from the outside. Whatever their code is, it's private. They can put whatever access codes or whatever they want in there because you can't audit the code. Open source is what Bitcoin is. Open source is what almost every other cryptocurrency is out there, meaning the code is open. It is available to anyone who wants to look at it. So if there was a backdoor or an access code or whatever you want to call it, then the various different people, and there are probably hundreds if not thousands of them who have audited this code over the 13, 14 years that Bitcoin has been around now, they would have caught that. They would have seen the backdoor. They would have seen
that's an assumption.
If I could go a step further on this to explain it. So what you have is you'll have code that is written by somebody, and what that code really is just the description. So it's like if this, then do that. If add these numbers together, do this kind of thing. And those are just, I'll say, like verbal descriptions. They're not written in a way that's easy for people to just read, but they are just written like that. And then when that changes over to like an executable or something like that, it has to run through a compiler. So You know, as a person who uses a computer on a consumer level, you might be used to like, oh, I don't know how this works. I just click on this link and it opens up. But what we're talking about is the actual stuff, because anybody can take that raw, text file basically that just says if this, then do that; if that, then this. You know, and they can compile it themselves using their own compilers. Even
that's correct.
So. I wanted to make a point there, and I'm just trying to remember what you had said last.
What I'm saying
ties in with what he's saying.
So the thing is that you're making an assumption that people are going to find in the code a backdoor. But when you're the creator of something, you know the secrets about it. So when you make something, like for example, when I make different silver things, I know secrets about it. We know in deeper down. And that no one who's analyzing that's necessarily going to understand.
Do you have backdoors
that
in your silver?
Yeah, you have
no,
backdoors
but I'm just saying,
your silver?
when you're deeply involved in a project, you know a lot more about it when you create something. So what I'm saying is that the people who created Bitcoin, they know a lot more about it, and they can slip something in a deep dark spot where you're not necessarily going to notice it.
No, it doesn't work like that, dude. Bitcoin is one of the most scrutinized sets of code on the planet. And the reason why it's highly scrutinized is because it is highly valuable.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
How would you do something like ordering something online or from across the country? I mean, even forget online because that might be confusing it. Just think about the fact that we used to have something like Sears catalogs and people used to order stuff from across the country via mail or whatever. How are people going to do their payments with gold and silver without, I mean, wouldn't the future of it be a crypto of something, even if there's still the gold and silver?
So, well, that's a great question. And so it sounds like you're asking a few questions, though, at a time. But
I mean,
one of them,
I put a lot in there, yeah.
So first, how does two people that are not geographically close to each other trade stuff? Well, the same way with the Sears catalog that you mentioned, back in those days, you sent them a check. And then they sent you the pants or the shirts or whatever thong Colin was buying. So they sent. So in this case,
people about that on air. Dave.
Sorry about that. That was my bad. I forgot.
But I'll have it on later. Don't worry.
Thank you. You just ruined my life. Anyway, okay, and stole my childhood. But anyway, so Greta Thunberg.
Okay,
so
you stole my childhood. Yeah.
Yes, I'm trying to get back on track. Oh, yes. So it goes
Sears
back
catalog.
To you can send some silver in the mail and they can send you the thing. Now, in modern times where we've gotten into an area of electronic payments, well, not like being religious here, but this is more just a phrase. The devil operates in the area of convenience. And so you're like, wow, it's so convenient that I can send cryptocurrency and I can send it anywhere at any time and it doesn't like have any, infinitely divide. Well, those are indicators that it's so convenient that that's where the devil operates. So if you say that convenience is great and I like convenience, but
anything, it's just paranoia.
That's why I walk everywhere.
Well, but it's just true that, yeah, the more convenient things get, you get soft. And that's why Colin walks everywhere. And that's why he's so like chiseled and sculpted.
The thing about it is like, it just because something could be true and you're explaining, because I make this comment all the time that people, I hate when I hear people my age saying like, blah, 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 this thing that's obviously control. It's so convenient. Like I just swipe my phone to pay and I pay with Apple Pay. It's so convenient. I hate that too. Inconvenience is definitely an area where, quote unquote, they are going to get us to hand over more and more control. But when you're talking about cryptocurrency and you say, oh, it could be it, the fact that this is convenient just is a sign. That's just a claim with nothing to back it up.
Well, but it's one more of 1,000 things.
Well, and what I was saying was a little different. What I'm saying is if you're going to use something like a check or Western Union or even taking the silver and putting it in a thing and shipping it to the other person with all the issues that there are with that, wouldn't it be the case that we could just have a new technology for that specific thing, which is long-distance, impersonal transfers?
I like local markets. I kind of want to get things like from local places. Right now, the way that the world has been organized
think about all the things. Just, I mean, have you ever done an audit of the things in your own life? How many of them are actually local? But not.
Can I expand on that? So, first of all, I like local things. And the food, for example, like the food industry, and when you buy food at the grocery store, it mostly comes from a few centralized locations where it's mass produced and mass distributed. And they're putting all kinds of toxic poisons in it. And so that is not that good. And I would rather be finding, and I'm going to make a point, I promise. I would rather be going to local markets and buying meat from a local farmer. Now, the reason why that's centrally produced food is in that way is it's been subsidized by the government and by the people that own the government in order for them to control it and cause you to buy it because they've made it cheaper. But in my vision, I like local things, and I would rather not have a market that's been manipulated into making me buy everything from 1,000 miles away. That way it can be shut off on me someday.
Well, there's a lot of products though that aren't like the food and things like that that are going to be made, you know, in a mass produced way in one central place. Like, for instance, cars or certain types of electronics or there's just a lot. I mean, and like I was saying, when I was saying go through your life and look at it, I wasn't like calling you a hypocrite, like, oh, look at all these things that you buy that are from. I was just saying, like, look at all the things that you buy. How many of them could be produced locally?
Unscreened caller, are you calling in on topic about alternative currencies?
Yeah.
Yes, I am. I'm here to answer a question about the radio thing and to give Colin a hard time about some of his opinions about computer security.
Okay, go ahead.
You're only allowed to talk about one of those things, so choose wisely, sir. No, I'm
kidding. No, you can. You can talk about it.
Oh, well, I got to give you a hard time,
Colin. Let's start off about the radio. I'm really interested in that. Is that what you said?
So to answer your question about, or the previous caller's question about radio, cryptocurrency transaction is a piece of data that's been cryptographically signed in its simplest form. And once that piece of data has been cryptographically signed, it needs to be communicated to a device that's online, but not necessarily a device that's particularly intelligent or trustworthy. And that can be done via a QR code, or it can be done via RF, or it can be done by all kinds of means that a lot of people don't really think about. There's a lot of people, for example, that will have a couple of different phones that they use, and one phone is where they store their cryptography, their cryptocurrency. That phone is always in airplane mode, and it's never connected to Wi-Fi. And when they're doing transactions, they'll just create this QR code that they can then scan, and then off it goes on the other device, which is much less trustworthy. And there's actually a fellow at Porkfest a couple of years ago named Patrick, some of you may know him, who was distributing these portable devices called, I think they're called Gotenna. But if you Google Bitcoin and radio, it's like the first thing that comes up. And so people are definitely doing transactions over RF, over radio. So that's definitely been done before. And in fact, lot of cryptography, people think about it being this thing that needs to be connected to the internet or needs this huge modern computer kind of a thing, when that's really not the case. You can do pretty advanced cryptography with devices that are really cheap to build and operate, and can just create these very small messages that you can then blast over RF or whatever, even over audio, just like an old school modem, you know.
So wow. let me get this straight. I mean, I obviously understand that, you know, you're just sending the data through the radio waves, but what you're saying is that they actually have, like, let's say, like, a protocol for it and what frequencies to use and all of that. Like, it's like a seamless thing that people can just do, like, for transmitting crypto via radio?
Yeah, so I've never done it before myself, but I've heard about it before. And so just during the break, I did a really quick Google search, and people are saying use TXTenna and the Samurai wallet, and it works. And I would bet that if you bothered to look it up on YouTube, there's probably a guy showing you how to do it in a five-minute tutorial.
The FCC has declared that encryption is illegal. So does that mean that they can't do it legally?
No, that's incorrect.
Oh.
Encryption is illegal on ham bands. That's probably what you're referring to. Encryption's perfectly legal. It's everywhere. It's in Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi is encrypted.
Oh, okay. So I was kind of joking, considering I don't care what's illegal, but I just thought that was an annoying little thing that popped up as I'm Googling this stuff while you're talking. Honestly, to be honest, sure. It doesn't all make sense to me, but that's kind of what's great about having like a community of people who care about freedom. It's like the people who are radio computer geniuses can understand that stuff and bring it up on online as soon as the government closes stuff down. And I just love that.
Well, I just want to make one more quick point on that, and then I'll give Colin a hard time, which he deserves.
Mm-hmm.
The point
is, I will find out where this guy lives, and I will take it out on him. Oh, wait, sorry, in a nonviolent fashion.
Colin.
He said, please.
Anyway, The point I was getting to with that is that there's a device that's highly trusted that's never connected to the internet, which is where the cryptographic operations happen, signing the crypto transactions, and then there's a device that is somewhere else that's relatively untrusted that is connected to the broader network, which is where the transmission of that transaction actually occurs.
Peakless Mountaineer, a co-host of ours, is on the phone. Peakless, did you have a question for Silver Dave or a comment on our conversation here?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to Silver Dave. So you were in the Army, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, so you know the danger of overestimating your opponent, right?
The danger of overestimating your opponent. I think it's not as bad as underestimating your opponent.
Well, sure, sure. But like, there are a lot of, say, opportunities that you might miss. If you're like, no, I'm sure that he has guards there. Of course he has guards there. I can't go that way, so I'll go this harder way. Like, if you overestimate their abilities, you won't take advantage of the situation as it is.
Okay.
Okay, so...
Well, do you want...
exactly what you're doing here with, like, you obviously don't have, like, the technical expertise to really speak to that, but you're just kind of assuming that there must be some hidden backdoor somehow, in spite of all of the people looking at the code, in spite of the obvious reward for finding any kind of backdoor like that.
So the backdoor can exist in a place where they know you're not going to look. And because basically in a moment, I'm getting ready to explain just one more backdoor that's so obvious and that basically ruins everything that people think that Bitcoin or Monero is secret or untraceable.
I want you to get into that, but I do really like the topic that Peakless Mountaineer is getting onto here. I think that a lot of the times, like, people like who are probably definitely right about a lot of things and skeptical of the government, which is always right to be skeptical of the government. I think a huge problem that they have, and my parents did this a lot as around me as I was a kid, is overestimating. Oh, they can do anything. So it makes you hopeless. Like, oh, well, yeah,
I see libertarians, anarchists doing that all the time.
Yeah, the government has all the power to ruin our lives. They can do absolutely anything. I don't even have to understand it.
They do that, but they're even more self-defeating. Not to derail this too much, they're really self-defeating in a lot of other ways, to where, like, they'll look at a thing that's good and they'll be like, well, clearly there's something bad in the background of this thing that's hidden somewhere. And I'm like, really? You can't just, like, take a victory every now and then?
Well, right. There's this book called The Art of War by Sun Tzu, and I've read it a number of times. I recommend it.
I have never gotten all the way through it. It is that thought-provoking.
Wow.
It's a very short book, too. But one of the things he says is that if one knows thyself and they know their enemy, they need not worry about the outcome of 100 battles. If one knows not their enemy and knows themselves, then they will fare fare one of two battles. And so, in order to be successful 100 out of 100 battles, you have to know yourself and know your enemy. And if you don't know that the global power elite control the internet, then you don't know your enemy.
Really?
Do you think you control the internet?
Example,
I bet you couldn't have internet if you just didn't pay your bill.
Internet is not in any particular person's control. And in fact, it's pretty obvious, because you think that they would allow us to congregate? You think that I would have heard about the Free State Project if they had control over the internet? They don't have control over it. No one does.
Hmm. Okay.
I mean, unless you're claiming the Free State Project is an inside job.
Well,
I mean, you were in the military, so can I really trust your silver?
He already said he has a silver back door.
Yeah,
and before I hear your back door theory, so let me ask this though: if the internet continues to exist, and if cryptocurrencies work as they appear and as they have a track record of appearing, then why would silver be better?
Well, first of all, you can't have cryptocurrency without silver, because all the devices you use to transmit or receive cryptocurrency have silver in them. Silver is the best conductor of electricity of any material on the periodic table. Second, it is the best thermal conductor of thermal energy on the periodic table. There's no other element that conducts thermal energy better than silver. Third, silver is the best reflector of the light spectrum of any material on the planet. And if you like cameras, if you like solar panels, if you like electronics, if you like your computer, if you like your phone, silver is ingredients and all
you
those
can't
things.
You can say that about bananas.
And that's what the value of it is.
You're making a circular argument. So what you're saying is you're like, well, silver can be used for all these things. And because it can be used for all these things, therefore,
that's what makes it valuable.
No,
hello.
No. That's what makes it valuable for the use in those things. But what you then say is you then say, oh, because it's useful as those things, therefore people want to stack it independently of that and save it. But I could say the same thing about copper. I mean, copper can be used in this and this. And there are certain things that copper can be used for that silver can't be used for, certain chemicals, things like that. But it would be one thing to say, oh, well, copper can be used in pipes and in this and in that. But because it can be used in that, therefore people want to stack it.
Because they know that the plumber is going to want copper to make pipes to put water in your house. And so they know that if they have it, they can trade it to him because it has a use. Digits on your computer screen have no use.
Oh, I'm not making an argument, and this argument that I'm making though isn't opposing it to Bitcoin at this point. I'm just saying that the price of silver, if all prices are set on the margin. So it's not just set by how much of it's traded. It's set by what the price is on the margin, what the final thing that it's sold for is used as, right? Because I'm going to be at a loss for words at how to explain it. But if people were not stacking silver, right, just as they're not stacking all sorts of other metals that are even rarer and even more,
useful?
Noble, like platinum and palladium and things
What's
like
noble
that.
Mean, like not reactive?
Yeah, non-reactive, because silver is actually way more reactive than, well, those other ones I just mentioned.
Palladium and platinum.
Yeah, So I wanted to come back around to the first point and give you a really good example of going too far and overestimating your opposition. So an example of going way too far in overestimating your opposition, there are some people that legitimately believe that the power and political elites are alien lizard people with advanced technology. And because their advanced technology is just unquestionable, then there's no point in even struggling against them.
I struggle with that thought sometimes because of the Sumerian palettes.
Now, that's not true, except metaphorically. It's very metaphorically true, but the evidence is very sparse for that. Now, and either way, you don't want to act like that's true.
Yeah, that's kind of the conclusion I've come to. I don't want to believe that.
I agree with what you're saying in the sense that, in fact, even my mother sometimes says, you know, don't give them so much credit. Sometimes thinking about like the government and that like they're really bungled. And so she'll sometimes say that, oh, we're giving them too much credit. But
David,
it's your mother. Please don't call on Free Talk Live and talk about me again. It's so horrible.
Is that her? Has that kind of accent?
No, she doesn't sound like that at all. But I like to impersonate.
So,
but the thing is this. We were talking about not overestimating the global power elite and the government. Who do you think has... Well, before I say this, Bitcoin is all about computing power, and Bitcoin mining, tell me if I'm wrong, is all about doing computations, so it requires electricity and processor power. Am I right so far?
Yeah.
Okay. So who do you think has the most processing power? Do you think it is either A, Johnny and mother in his grandmother's basement, or do you think it is the government and the people that own them who have giant liquid-cooled data processing centers in several states
Johnnies?
Across America. They're in several states, including Arizona.
Dave?
I would have to say that I think you're right,
yeah,
Dave.
They have giant liquid-cooled processing centers,
Dave,
and they have...
Well, I want to answer his question.
And they had...
Dave,
they invented the internet, they hired Alphabet Corporation. So do you think that they don't have the most power in the sector? But by the same argument, his question is, who has more? It seems to me like government does.
Yeah, but why would anybody even own a gun then at that point? Because they have bigger tanks.
That's a good point.
How many Johnnies?
What was that?
How many Johnnies, Dave?
But even if you add all the Johnnies together, I honestly think the Bitcoin... So he's saying how many individuals are mining Bitcoin themselves versus the government with their computing power. And I would still have to say, if I just had to guess, I really don't know that the government has the most. So what do you guys say to that?
So I know Colin gave a good example that helps me answer this. So if we know that the government has massive liquid-cooled data processing centers, and you have your computer that you bought from one of the companies, like that, they obviously have a lot more power in that sector than you. And Colin said, well, are you going to get rid of your pistol if they have a tank? Well, let's take it back to special forces. And it's called exploit your enemy's vulnerabilities. Don't fist fight a tank.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more. All for free at freetalklive.com.